Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this January the 31st on the West Coast, now February the 1st on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Boy, does that feel weird saying that. that's the case. If your clocks are set correctly, it is February the 1st on the East Coast and of all points east. We'd also like to welcome those kind enough to tune in on Wind Talkers Radio Network, and hope you enjoy tonight's show. I think it's going to be a real good one. Glad you could tune in. Well, for the past 4.5 years, I have been telling the world as best I can about the massive financial corruption that's going on in Washington, D.C. and on Wall Street. But it's not limited to just there. This is an international affair. The New World Order hacks in the banking system and in the corporate world have made your bank account, my bank account, your pension funds, any monies you have stashed away for a rainy day, your real estate, your homes, your private property, a playpen, a ping pong table, if you will, for their financial shenanigans. And tonight's guest, Dr. H.U. Watt, and I are going to be talking about that in a little bit. But about 2 minutes before showtime tonight, I got sort of a brainstorm, and I thought, I wonder what it would be like to be the Inspector General of the Federal Reserve with all of this corruption going on. What does one think of, or what tune does one hum as one goes to work at the Fed? And I thought, geez, I think I have a song for that.
Back to back, anything can make no shame.
That's the honorary Fed chairman, Quincy Jones, and his song, Stuff Like That, sung by the assistant honorary assistant to the lady who we're going to hear from in a few minutes, the Inspector General of the Federal Reserve. That was Chaka Khan singing all those testifying leads in the background. So appropriate. This song, if you didn't know better, you would say it was written for the Federal Reserve. It was written around 1980. That's the funny thing about it is that 30 years later, it still applies. Well, I'm going to move on right now and bring tonight's regular Monday night guest on. He's not regular, but he's regularly on the show. So he hosts his own show on the Micro Effect Network. It's called The Story Behind the Story. It airs Monday through Friday, every Monday through Friday now. The new time is 10 a.m. to noon Mountain Time on the East Coast. That's noon to 2 p.m. And the rest of you know how to figure out those times. He has a website, atrueaught.com. He is a prolific author, journalist, researcher, naturopath, and PhD. And I welcome again to the show on this first day of February, 2011, Dr. A. Truat. True, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Don. Golly, I like to think I'm regular. I don't have to take any medicine.
Well, you know what I meant. You're a little bit beyond regular. What did you think of that song? Was that a good song?
It's a good song. Good song. Oh my goodness! You know, I got this this video forwarded to me just today. It's had well over 2 million hits on it on YouTube, and I think it needs to have 150 million hits to it, because I mean, there's nothing more important than your buying power of your money, ladies and gentlemen, and the shenanigans that have been going on. You know, golly, it's there in black and white now. This Ms. Coleman, absolutely. I got to say, I felt sorry for her, because she just was so absolutely lost in the obfuscation and the cover-up, and she could not answer, or she would not and could not answer the questions posed to her by the congressional board. That's unbelievable, unbelievable video. But before we go on and play the clip, let me get a little setup for you again. This is from
Beyond Mine? I thought mine was great.
No. Pretty good setup. This is from the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System's official website, federalreserve.gov/OIG. That stands for Office of Inspector General. Elizabeth A. Coleman, ladies and gentlemen, is the Federal Reserve's Inspector General. This is the one paragraph job description, Don and ladies and gentlemen, quote, the Office of Inspector General, OIG, I just like to think, oh my gosh, that should be OMG, OIG, conducts independent and objective audits, inspections, evaluations, investigations, comma, and other reviews related to programs and operations of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System, otherwise known as the Board. The OIG efforts promote integrity, economy, efficiency, and effectiveness, semicolon, helps prevent and detect fraud, waste, and abuse, and strengthen, and this is a key word, ladies and gentlemen, strengthen accountability to the Congress and the public. The Office of Inspector General's work assists the board, the Federal Reserve Board, in managing risk and in achieving its overall mission to foster the stability, integrity, and efficiency of the nation's monetary, financial, and payment systems so as to promote optimal macroeconomic performance. That's the economic performance, ladies and gentlemen, on the big picture, the macroeconomic performance. Now, that's a very warm and fuzzy job description, is it not, Don?
Oh, my goodness. Oig.
That's
you have to say oig.
Oig. Well, ladies and gentlemen, what you're going to hear tonight is, you know, the emperor is being unmasked, okay? This emperor has no clothes. It's sitting there in public view, stark naked. $9 trillion of off. Okay, this is what's come forth into the congressional hearings, ladies and gentlemen. $9 trillion in off the balance sheet spending and or funding. $9 trillion, as the congressman says, and you'll hear, that's $30,000 per man, woman, and child in America. And all he's wanting to do is find out from the wonderful Ms. Coleman if, in fact, they're doing anything about it. What investigations are they doing? And if they're not doing it, why the hell not? Okay?
Yeah, you know, true, that amount, $9 million, is less than one-third of the Wantagate money that brought out.
$9 trillion.
Yes.
$9 trillion. Yeah.
Yes. $9 trillion is less than a third of the $27.5 trillion that Leo Wanta amassed. You know, and they had their hands on that. This is before bailouts. This is before all this QE2 and now QE3 about to.
Well, you know, Don, I did some number crunching over the weekend, and I've been really, really hammering this home. I have my Alex Studer did a great job posting my latest DVD on YouTube. I really don't have the time or capabilities to do that, but he did that for me, and it's wonderful. So it's on YouTube. So I posted that also on my website, and doggone it, I wanted to make sure, because I've had a lot of people comment, I say a lot, about 20 people, you know, with a bunch of questions. Well, they basically asked, if the Federal Reserve can't do the job, what makes you think Congress can do any better? Very valid questions, because their general consensus is, well, the Federal Reserve may be imperfect, but it's better than having, you know, unethical Congress people like Nancy Pelosi do the job. Okay, so yeah. Well, how important or how good of a job it really is the Federal Reserve doing? And Don, when you talk about the numbers, you've got what I crunched is there's roughly $60 trillion in real wealth. I mean, this is actual hardcore wealth worldwide. Yet there's over $600 trillion of Federal Reserve notes in the world reserve currency structure.
Mm-hmm.
There's that 10 times the fractional reserve banking. And it all hit me, Don. It just hit me clearly like a ton of bricks. This money that's created out of nowhere by the Fed and the International Monetary Fund, which is it's really its creation, it's never going – the debt is never going to be ever retired, period. It can't. There's just not enough real wealth in the world to cover the amount of interest that's generated. It just barely covers the principle of the creation of the dollar. So here you have – when you talk about $9 trillion generated off the balance sheet, all that is telling the people that are really educated – is that this is absolutely fueling inflationary and even hyperinflationary cycles.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line, Don.
And you remember the bailout that occurred at the end of the Bush administration, and they were saying something in the neighborhood of $850 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's just a number they threw out there for public consumption. Obama came in and orchestrated his own bailout to the tune of, say, $1 trillion. And he's And that was given to the banks, the very people that stole the money.
Indeed.
You see?
We were on the show last week, and then, of course, the following evening was the state, I call it the State of the Onion address, because it makes me cry. It makes my eyes water just to listen to this guy. And so but I did take notes. I did listen. I was a good American. I thought, I got to listen to what this hypnotist is saying. And I took some notes. Don, I heard him just start crowing, basically, that they were on the right track. We're on the right track. We've got over 1 million jobs created. Remember? That's what he said. Well,
1.2, I think, was the
actual the actual figures is 1,120,000 by the office, the federal office there. But many of them are new government bureaucracy jobs. That's the first problem. But here's the big thing. I wrote this down as soon as I heard him say it, and I went in and counted up all of this, that both the Federal Reserve's quantitative easement 1 and 2, the TARP, the money spent on cash for clunkers, the Bush administration, all of this is Bernanke, you know, and Geithner, right? So you add up the total, you get $4.6 trillion told as an economic bailout and or stimulus packages, right? $4.6 trillion with a T. Do the math. I went and I got my big heavy duty calculator with a lot of zero capacity because you need that. 1.12 million jobs created at the cost of 4.6 trillion with a T. That's 4,600 million billion. Okay. Thousand, 4,600 billion. Well, do the math. Bottom line is it comes out to over $4 million per job created. Only government can be that efficient, Don.
Well, it's like in Iraq. The cost per soldier in Iraq is $390,000 a year. But those soldiers aren't seeing that money. Where is all that money being spent? Whose hands is it going into?
Exactly. A good point. But then you take the total economic pictures. This is the Office of Management and Budget, the OMB office. This is official federal government statistics, ladies and gentlemen. You take that since the recession of 2007, when the jobs, you know, we're saying we're entering into the recessionary period, December of 2007 through December of 2010, Don, and guess what? There's been 8.36 million people losing their jobs. That many jobs have been lost. So Obama says he's got 1 million jobs back. Well, do the math, ladies and gentlemen. 8 million jobs lost. Divide that again into the number of total TARP and stimulus bailout funds, and you get $556,000 per lost job. Don, just pay the people that's lost their jobs.
Yeah, you know? Just give the people the money.
Yeah.
and then leave. Go to Mars
and
or something.
Leave away. But you see, the problem is, where does this $4.6 trillion come from? Literally out of thin air, out of the printing press in the Federal Reserve. And that's just what's accounted for on the TARP, on the budgets that's actually been shown. What you're going to hear in this clip is $9 trillion more that's, quote, off the balance sheet. It's not even accounted for. And you know, I just read you the Office of Inspector General's responsibilities. Don, this is the fox guarding their own hen house. And it becomes very obvious.
Yeah.
Very obvious that this system is totally gone.
To partially answer your rhetorical question of where did this money come from, China on two occasions fronted $4.5 trillion to avoid this from happening, and they stole it. The Queen of England and one of the princes in Saudi Arabia fronted $6.2 trillion. This occurred back in 2008 and 2009. And we were supposed to be on a gold standard as of December of, I believe it was 2008, if I'm not mistaken. December of 2008, around December 10th. We were supposed to be on a gold standard back then. It's not just the American people who are being hoodwinked here. The whole world, the whole world's financial community knows about this. So this is just a taste of how this whole operation is being run. And bear with us as we listen to this clip of Representative Alan Grayson questioning Mrs. Coleman, the OIG.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Inspector Coleman, you're the Inspector General for the Federal Reserve, right?
Okay. That's correct.
Have you done any investigations concerning the Federal Reserve's role in deciding not to save Lehman Brothers, which led to shockwaves that went through the entire financial system?
In that particular area, you know, I don't generally comment on specific investigations, but we do not currently have an investigation in that particular area.
All right. What about the $1 trillion plus an expansion of the Federal Reserve's balance sheet since last September? Have you conducted any investigations regarding that?
Right now we have a, we call it a review, and so I don't know if you, the term investigation may have different connotations. So we're actually conducting a fairly high-level review of the various lending facilities collectively, which would include the TALF, a variety of the different programs that are in process. So we're looking at them at a fairly high level to identify risk.
Well, I understand that, but we're talking about events that started unfolding 8 months ago. Have you reached any conclusions about the Fed expanding its balance sheet by over $1 trillion since last September?
We have not yet reached any conclusions.
Do you know who received that money?
For the... We're in the process right now of doing our review, and
right, but you're the Inspector General. My question to you specifically is, do you know who received that $1 trillion plus that the Fed extended and put on its balance sheet since last September? Do you know the identity of the recipients?
I do not know. We have not looked at that specific area at this particular point on those reviews.
What about Bloomberg's report that there are trillions of dollars in off-balance sheets transactions that the Federal Reserve has entered into since last September? Are you familiar with those off-balance sheet transactions?
You know, I think it may be important at this point, too, just to bring up a certain aspect related to our jurisdiction and just to clarify perhaps some of my earlier comments. We are the Inspector General for the Board of Governors, and we have direct oversight over board programs and operations, and are also able to look at board-delegated functions to the Reserve Banks, as well as the board's oversight and supervision of the Reserve Banks. We do not have jurisdiction to directly go out and audit Reserve Bank activities specifically. Nevertheless, in our lending facilities project, for example, we are looking at the board's oversight over the program, and to the extent that extends out to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York.
Well, I have a copy of the Inspector General Act here in front of me, and it says, among other things, that it's your responsibility to conduct and supervise audits and investigations relating to the programs and operations of your agency.
That's correct.
So I'm asking you, if your agency has, in fact, according to Bloomberg, extended $9 trillion in credit, which, by the way, works out to $30,000 for every single man, woman, and child in this country, I'd like to know, if you're not responsible for investigating that, who is?
We have responsibility for the Federal Reserve's programs and operations audits, to conduct audits and investigations in that area. In terms of who's responsible for investigating, would you mind repeating the question one more time?
What have you done to investigate the off-balance sheet transactions conducted by the Federal Reserve, which, according to Bloomberg, now total $9 trillion in the last 8 months?
I'll have to look specifically at that Bloomberg article. I don't know if I have actually seen that particular one.
That's not the point. The question is, have you done any investigation or auditing of off-balance sheet transactions conducted by the Federal Reserve?
at this point, we're at the very, we're conducting our lending facility project at a fairly high level and have not gotten to a specific level of detail to really be in a position to respond to your question.
Have you conducted any investigation or auditing of the losses that the Federal Reserve has experienced on its lending since last September?
We're still in the process of conducting that review. Until we actually, you know, go out and gather the information, I'm not in a position to really respond to the specific question.
So are you telling me that nobody at the Federal Reserve is keeping track on a regular basis of the losses that it incurs on what is now a $2 trillion portfolio?
I don't know if you're telling me that there, you're mentioning that there's losses. I'm just saying that we're not, until we actually look at the program and have the information, we are not in a position to say whether there are losses or to respond in any other way to that particular.
Mr. Chairman, my time is up, but I have to tell you honestly, I am shocked to find out that nobody at the Federal Reserve, including the Inspector General, is keeping track of this.
You know, Drew, would you repeat the question again, please? I think
I'm so busy trying to make up an excuse and make it sound legitimate, I forget what the question is.
I've been overcome by swamp gas in here.
Holy mackerel.
My own.
And look at that lady behind her. I mean, is that a harpy or what? You know?
Yeah. Well, it's probably the chairman's legal representatives making sure she doesn't stick her foot in her mouth.
Exactly. You know, that a better theme song for this is that H.R. Puffin Stuff's theme song.
I've got another one, but it's a good one.
Oh, witchy poo. Whoa, witchy poo. I mean, come on. Oh, my goodness. Ladies and gentlemen, if that isn't enough evidence right there to say, you know, we've got to make a change, no longer do we need a private bank, a group of private banks, 13 member banks, ladies and gentlemen, printing money and charging interest on that privilege. And the interest is simply the income taxes generated. Income tax revenues, that's the sole reason for collecting income tax. Why do you think the 1913 Federal Reserve Act was accompanied by the Internal Revenue Service?
Yeah. You know, it's already a known fact. In fact, I've reported this for a couple of years where these funds were going. These were going off to offshore accounts. These were going to Deutsche Bank, Commerzbank, Bank Paribas in France, the Cayman Islands, you name it. Korea got $55 million for shooting a few missiles when Bush was in office. You know, there was a transaction that was tracked to India, $25 trillion. $25 trillion. And then later on, we had this false flag event at Mumbai. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
All
mm-hmm.
of this stuff is connected. All of these false flag events are all interconnected with each other. And then you have the Gulf of Mexico. You have them giving money away to Petrobras in Brazil, of whom the no-legged Mac Daddy and George Soros are also partners with. I mean, the corruption is everywhere. This is just scratching the surface, Drew. This goes into the quadrillions.
Again, yeah, there's all these bank accounts, these entries, these off-balance sheet transactions going on, Don, but in reality, there's no real wealth there. So the world is going to be plunged into a collapsed system of hyperinflation. You can't continue to do this without having, you know, these dollar bills become as worthless as Zimbabwe's dollars. You just can't continue to do it.
No, it's and they're trying to pull another fast one now with Egypt. Look at what happened to Iceland and Greece and their banks. See, all of these countries are involved in the same game that we have going on here. This is all by design. This is intentional to bring this country to its knees.
Indeed. Indeed. And, yeah, we you had an interesting set of pictures there. It's kind of, this is changing the subject a little bit, but not much, where you see the facade, the architectural facade of our Department of the Treasury, and how it's identical to the nth degree of the so-called Treasury of Petra. Petra, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, is an Arabic term that means rock, the rock. And it's, you know, as I reviewed that with you, Don, I'm just doing a lot of thinking about that. And we have the scriptures where we see Peter being called the rock as well. Petra, Peter, the rock.
Mm-hmm.
And the rock is where I will build my church. Well, you were right on, and not only you, but other people have speculated that the treasury of Petra was really not where they kept gold and silver per se, but the most important historical archives of records. And I think that's right on.
The Dead Sea Scrolls is. I mean, this hit me like a ton of bricks when I listened to your research. And you were talking about the assassination attempts or the assassinations of key political figures, and you mentioned Sirhan Sirhan, and you know that whether that meant anything or not, this dividing the word Sirhan into two syllables, Sir and Han, the Han were the most populous ethnic group in China, still may be today. For that matter, but that they were privy to this trade route that was established between Petra and Wadi Sirhan. The Sirhan Valley. Okay, uh-huh. The Sirhan Valley. And they mapped this out and they took this back to the emperor and they began trading. And it was almost like this was some ancient message when they brought Sirhan Sirhan out and made him the fall guy for the Robert Kennedy assassination.
And it would seem that Robert Kennedy was ready to break a huge, huge story concerning the assassination of his brother. He had continued to investigate, I'm sure. I had a little bit of discussion on this, and not in depth, but a little bit. We scratched the surface when I was interviewed by George Magazine's editor, and I gave the file of Gemstone to him to pass on to JFK Jr. We talked about what Bobby was doing as far as investigation into the death and whether he was letting it go, and I can never forget the look on this editor's face, who was a personal close friend through boyhood of JFK Jr. He looked at me and he said, "Oh," he said, "yeah, we really want to get a hold of the files that have been lost of Uncle Bobby's." You know, wow, because he said there was definite knowledge there. They wanted an airtight case before they brought anything to bear in the Justice Department. And
I think he knew of this.
Indeed.
I really do, and I think he told his brother this, and that made him, that caused him to, or influenced him to make the decision basically sidestep the Federal Reserve. And this, our listeners are wondering, what are we talking about here? We've got some photographs. I compared the architecture of this, what was known as the Treasury Building of Petra. And it's got to be a 30-foot-high door.
Monstrous door. Monstrous door.
Yes, the whole building is monstrous, and it's carved into the mountain. And I'm going to tell you flat out, the scientist inventor Jim Murray looked at this photograph and he said, there's no way that they handed out buckets full of copper chisels and hammers and said, okay, boys, get to work. they used a very advanced technology to carve that rock.
They indeed had to. But this is, I mean, I can't imagine anybody doing this precision stonework and so intricate. I mean, it's amazing. It is one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Mm-hmm. You see it's portrayed in a few movies. I think Raiders of the Lost Ark, it was there. You know, when you have to go through this narrow cleft in the solid rock. It's only, you know, one person at a time is all that can go in there. So it's really easy to defend it, okay? 50 soldiers with bows and arrows could defend that. You know, an army couldn't get into there. They have to go in one at a time and expose themselves one at a time.
Yes, but it's beyond coincidental that the pattern of construction that they used on the facade over the pillars and the entrance are so exactly alike.
Indeed.
When compared with the U.S. Treasury building.
It's identical. It's the same geometrical structure, I would say. The same obtuse angles. Everything about that triangle is identical. Identical.
Yes. And that's not an accident. These things are planned. Now, we're talking about a building that was built before the time of Christ. Imagine that.
I just wanted to know who did the architecture of the Treasury building and what the background is. Again, it goes back. I'm not sure of the history of that. Are you, Don, when it was built and who actually did the
architecture? I've got a file on it. To tell you the truth, I just kept rolling with what I was finding and didn't dwell on it. But I can look up that answer. Maybe before the end of the show, I'll have it for you.
Well, I think it was in the 1800s, wasn't it? Clear back then. And I don't know how the architectural designers would know that much about Petra. I mean, I don't think there was National Geographic pictures back then.
Well, it shows an early Masonic influence, if you ask me. They extended this feature of these blocks underneath the sides of the triangle, the two sides that form the apex of the triangle have these squares spaced underneath or inside the triangle along those two top lines, and the bottom line, the third side of the triangle, has a row outside, and it goes all the way across the Treasury building. It probably goes all the way around it. I haven't been able to find a picture of the rear side of the building. But, in fact, it was difficult to get a close-up picture of the front side, you know, straight on. They like to show sort of a 35 or 45-degree profile shot of the building. But it would be interesting to study it and see how much more it resembles it. They have more pillars because of the size of the overhang when you walk up the stairs. However, these are numbers that they're playing a numbers game, let's put it that way. You have six pillars on the temple building at Petra. Certainly anyone that's studied the Illuminati knows the significance of the number six. The U.S. Treasury has eight pillars, and eight numerologically for them represents wealth, income, riches. Use whatever description you want to use for having a lot of money.
And like I said on my posting on my website, look at again, if you watch that video there of Elizabeth Coleman, notice this on her left lapel of her business jacket there, you see the eight-pointed star of Babylon. That's the mark of Hammurabi. And all of these old codes, ladies and gentlemen, the mark of Mystery Babylon is that eight-pointed star, which really is a double cross figure. It dates back to really the double crossing of Cain, where he slew his brother Abel. And it goes back in again to the same occultic structure, Don, as the Wicca, the witchcraft wheel of the year, where every date on that calendar, eight-pointed wheel of the year, is a Black Sabbath structure. Okay, mm-hmm. Rituals happen on those days. So, the first thing I saw when I saw her on full screen on camera, I said, "Look at that witch's wheel on just right there. It looks like in pearls." In an eight-pointed spoked wheel, right on her, just like, here I am. And if you understand the symbolism, you see the same icon there in the halls of the Supreme Court, the doors of the Supreme Court, the windows of the Supreme Court, the windows of the grand lodges of Oriental Freemasonry. It is absolutely through all of the secret societies, Don, that symbol.
And they put it right in front of your face, and people say, oh, look at the pretty windows.
Indeed, indeed. You
know? And it's a continuing hex, if you want to say.
I did an expose on the symbolism back when I made an exodus out of the Mormon church, because that New Nauvoo Temple, the skylight, there's an eight-pointed window there, and the symbolism is identical to, again, this code of Babylon and the witchcraft wheel of the year. There's no doubt about it. There's no difference whatsoever. And all over Temple Square in downtown Salt Lake, the conference center, even the lampposts are all in an octagonal hexagon, you know, the eight-pointed spokes are all over the place on that building.
Hmm.
It's just blatant.
Yeah, you know, we heard everything that was described in this little question and answer period during this committee investigation, or hearing, if you want to call it that. Talk about dancing. Dancing around the answer. I mean, here, you prefaced my playing the clip with her duties, and she was read her duties there, and she still danced around the question, trying to make excuses. What she wasn't able to say is, look, I don't dare stick my nose in that business. It'll be the end of me. I mean, that would be a truthful answer.
Yes. Well, if you go to her so-called curriculum vitae, you see her history. She was appointed Inspector General on May 6th of 2007. But she joined she was part of the Federal Reserve Board's Inspector General's office in 1989. She was hired as a senior auditor, promoted in 1999 to program manager and senior program manager. So she's come up the ranks. But look, she before being hired by the board, the Federal Reserve Board staff, she was employed by the Government Accountability Office. She has a BBA, James Madison University, as a graduate of the Stonier Graduate School of Banking, right out of Georgetown University, hotbed of the Jesuits right there. Mm-hmm. She also attended the Federal Reserve System's Trailblazers Leadership Conference. So, you know, it's not objective when you bring these people on, you know, from the ground up. You have them part of, you know, they're on the government tit from day one, and they're not going to rock any boat.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be told exactly what to say and what to do. And then when it really comes down to nutcracking time, and somebody like Congressman Grayson has the, you know, starts to really press the hard questions, she just folds. I mean, completely wilts and folds.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. She, because she was caught off guard. She was not prepared to speak truthfully to the questions that she was asked. And really, in anyone's mind who was listening to this, how could you not describe what your duties are? How could you dance around that? Well, the thing was, no one is auditing this. The correct response from her would have been, well, which set of books do you want me to answer?
Yeah, well, good point. And, you know, the hypocrisy of the prosecution of this Jewish Ponzi scheme gentleman, Bernie Madoff, you know, yeah, well, he took a couple billion. Come on, this makes Bernie Madoff look like he's playing tiddlywinks.
Yeah.
This is a huge Ponzi scheme, and the theft is happening every time you file a tax return, ladies and gentlemen, every time your money goes to the Federal Reserve. Look at your tax return. Look at your tax check next time you get it returned. It's cashed by a member of the Federal Reserve banking system, and it's used and it's typically cleared. The FRB clearinghouse is the British Virgin Islands, a British Commonwealth, ladies and gentlemen. That's because the member banks are not even American. They're part of the Rothschild network, ladies and gentlemen, in Great Britain and the Vatican.
Yes. Now I have the answer to your question about the year the U.S. Treasury was built. The east and central, east wing and the central portion of the building were built from 1836 through 1842.
That's about what I thought, right about the time of Andrew Jackson's.
Then the south wing, 1855 to 1861. The west wing from 1862 to 1864. And the north wing, 1867 through 1869. Now, there was no hospital there, so we know John McCain wasn't born there either.
Terrible. But the point, you know, during Jackson's administration is when he really, you know, he said on his deathbed, Andrew Jackson said on his deathbed, Don, I killed the bank. That's what I want to have on my epitaph, on my gravestone. I killed the bank. And indeed, he did rout the vipers out. That's what he did. And so the Treasury was empowered like never before during the 1836. And if you, again, ladies and gentlemen, it behooves you to read, you can Google this up, the 1792 Coinage Act. Read that thing. You also understand that the Coinage Act was issued and made a part of the Constitution, basically, because of the incredible importance that the Founding Fathers put on sound money. Sound money simply being the gold and silver coinage. It's not a gold or a silver standard, per se, ladies and gentlemen. It just means there has to be a basic anchor, a foundational anchor. And that's what those silver coins did for American commerce more than ever before. From 1792, Don, until 1965, when lying bastard Johnson, LBJ, signed that traitorous 1965 Coinage Act, which just gutted 1792 Coinage Act. But the 163 years of that bill, ladies and gentlemen, there was no need for a consumer price index. There was no need for the CPI analysis of pricing. You know why? Because guess what? There was no inflation.
Mm-hmm.
The basic cost of silver, which is the anchor, the silver price per ounce, $1.29. That's what it was in 1792, and that's what it was in 1965, ladies and gentlemen. So that is the pegging of the true cost of goods and services, because silver, and to some degree gold, but for the common man, the working class, silver has always been the so-called king of barter, all the way from day one in the history of the world, from the Byzantine Empire to the Roman Empire. It really is the king of barter. And so when you measure the actual value of a silver dollar, it's the silver that's in it, $1.29. There's only 90% silver to begin with, and then it's not a full ounce. So an ounce of silver in 1792 was $1.29, and it was in $1.29 in 1965. Zero inflation, ladies and gentlemen. You have some price fluctuations based on availability of goods and transfer of goods per the area and region. You know, if you're in the desert, you're going to pay maybe a little bit more for some water at a spring or a watering hole in a pub, okay? But across the board, equaling it out, there is no such fluctuation as inflation if you have a basis of value as a silver. And Don, that's the most important thing I could say tonight in this topic. When you start having these shenanigans of the Federal Reserve coming to light, what's really saying is they're setting the stage for some massive inflationary cycles, beginning with food, beginning with gasoline. It's going to jump, you know, it's going to increase. It just has to, as OPEC realizes that their reserve dollars are worth less. They have to charge more of them.
Well, yeah, and the oil companies are intentionally not getting the oil that we have. So this is all by design. You know, this building, if I can add a point about the Treasury building, It was designated a National Register of Historic Places designation and U.S. National Historic Landmark. Now, somebody reading that for the first time might think it says no right-handed pitchers and National Hockey League. But the date is significant. Here's another example of their ritual magic with numbers. November 11th, 1971. That's 11-11. It's not an accident that they do these things at all.
Did you happen to catch the Pro Bowl Sunday yesterday?
I was visiting a friend, and he had it on, and I think it was 42-0 in the second quarter.
I'm talking about the halftime show. They had the Goo Goo Dancers.
We were talking about that. Yeah,
freaking 11. They all wore these multicolored different jerseys, but all had the number 11 on it. And I jokingly said, isn't it funny that you know, and I wonder if football's America's game so much. You have two teams of 11 players on the field, right?
Mm-hmm.
That, again, the symbolisms of the numbers of 11, this being the year of 11, it's interesting.
Well, you know, the majorettes and the marching bands are twirling batons. Those represent the wands, or the magic wands. And the cheerleaders with the pom-poms, that's symbolic of casting magic dust on the crowd.
And speaking of that, what's the symbolism of, remember Don McLean's song, American Pie?
Mm-hmm.
One of the verses says the marching band took the field, but they refused to yield the day the music died. What's the symbolism of all that? To me, he's talking about satanic ritual and mind control. In a way only he can understand.
Mm-hmm. I was never a big Don McLean fan, I have to tell you. Just something about his music rubbed me the wrong way. I know a lot of people like him, but then again, a lot of people like strange music. You know?
Well, it's just the lyrics are absolutely strange in that thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're talking about bye-bye American pie. Well, you're talking about, apple pie being, mm-hmm. American way of life. Bye-bye America, it's a day the music dies.
Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Well, That's a sign that GM was going down.
<laughs> You know? Well, everything about the chorus is kind of nonsensical, but when you really get into the just dissecting the lyrics, he was definitely given some symbolism there.
Mm-hmm.
in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, they request it, and they give big cash rewards for compliance. They do.
They do.
Yeah. One of my musical guests, Doc B, who's actually an herbologist and a kinesiologist. He's a very well-known record producer, and he went from playing jazz and R&B, soul music. They recruited him to start producing some rap and hip-hop records, and they offered him $300,000 to put so many of this particular swear word, so many references to drive-by shootings or raping of one's girlfriend, or he said, it was crazy. He said, but I couldn't do that. I felt as if I had sold my soul, and I had a very spiritual experience, an awakening that just caused me to leave that. He's still a musician, but he's playing jazz now. And
okay, yeah,
and healing music. See.
Got it. I just pulled up the lyrics, and I just want to share this if I can. Here's the first verse. A long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance. And maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I'd deliver. Bad news on the doorstep. I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride. But something touched me deep inside the day the music died. That's the first verse. Then it comes the second verse. Did you write the book of love? And do you have faith in God above? If the Bible tells you so. Now, do you believe in rock and roll? Can music save your mortal soul? And can you teach me how to dance real slow? Well, I know that you're in love with him because I saw you dancing in the gym. You both kicked off your shoes. Man, I dig those rhythm and blues. I was a lonely teenage bronken buck with a pink carnation in a pickup truck. But I knew I was out of luck the day the music died. So I guess we need to figure out what does he mean by the day the music died. Third verse. Now for 10 years we've been on our own, and moss grows fat on a rolling stone, but that's not how it used to be. When the jester sang for the king and queen in a coat he borrowed from James Dean, and a voice that came from you and me. Oh, and while the king was looking down, the jester stole his thorny crown. The courtroom was adjourned. No verdict was returned. And while Lenin read a book on Marx, that's, we're talking Lenin, not
John Lennon.
John Lennon. And while Lenin read a book on Marx, the quartet practiced in the park. And we sang dirges in the dark the day the music died. Now, what about this next verse? Helter skelter in the summer swelter. Now, that's a code word for Manson.
Oh, yeah.
And his group. Helter skelter in the summer swelter. The birds flew off with a fallout shelter. 8 miles high and falling fast. It landed foul on the grass. The players tried for a forward pass with the jester on the sidelines in a cast. Now the halftime air was sweet perfume while the sergeants played a marching tune. We all got up to dance, oh, but we never got the chance. Because the players tried to take the field. The marching band refused to yield. Do you recall what was revealed that day the music died?
Yeah, one interpret that a couple of different ways, but one could say the day the music died signifies the day their relationship fell apart. However, that could mean the day that they lost their minds, their independence, their free will, if that makes
sense. Indeed. Now here's the final verse, Don. And there we were, all in one place, a generation lost in space, with no time left to start again. So come on, Jack be nimble, Jack be quick, Jack Flash sat on a candlestick, because fire is the devil's only friend. And as I watched him on the stage, my hands were clenched in fists of rage. No angel born in hell could break that Satan's spell. And as the flames climbed high into the night to light the sacrificial rite, I saw Satan laughing with delight the day the music died.
Told you I wasn't a big fan. Now I know why.
And then she sings, well, of course, they were. And I met a girl who sang the blues, and I asked her for some happy news. She just smiled and turned away. So I went down to the sacred store where I'd heard the music years before. But the man there said the music wouldn't play. And in the streets, the children screamed. The lovers cried and the poets dreamed, but not a word was spoken. The church bells all were broken. And the three men I admire most, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, they caught the last train for the coast the day the music died. Bye-bye, American Pie. I've always heard that song since I was in high school, Don, and I knew there was something very dark and sinister about that song, but I couldn't quite figure it out.
Yeah, I didn't connect with it. It's evident now that it's a program.
Yeah.
It's a program.
The day the music died. Anyway, yeah, we've had discussions on certain songs with Liz. She's an MK Ultra programmed assassin group, and you know, and she says how incredibly well the Illuminati uses music to program their slaves, and she had many examples, but we never talked about this specific song.
Yeah. I know the Beatles were heavily influential in delivering the messages that they had scripted from Tavistock.
Mm-hmm.
And they got away with a few of their own lyrics when, you know, there's a long involved story about Paul McCartney and him being replaced. Kenadachi's done a number of really in-depth, great research and articles on Brian Epstein and Paul McCartney's demise. And the fact that they got a double from Canada and did a little, probably a little bit of plastic surgery and got him to imitate Paul. That's certainly something that would break a band up.
And, well, speaking of that, do you know what the first music video to play on the brand new station called MTV, the new channel MTV? It ran for 24 hours straight. when MTV was launched? A little bit of a trivia question there, Maestro.
I don't know. If I were to guess, on the basis of what I said, would it be Yellow Submarine?
No. Oh, no. It's Phil Collins' Feel It in the Air Tonight.
Oh, yeah. That's a heavily, heavily scripted song for programming.
Indeed. Have you seen that?
I've seen the live performance of that where, you know, it's like watching a bunch of zombies in the audience.
Indeed. The video that's, you can still see it on YouTube, but it's, again, the video itself played continuous run for 24 hours straight on MTV, I understand, okay? You watch that video, it is amazing. I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Oh, Lord, right? As it's shown in the video, you have a gentleman sitting there in a dark, semi-dark room. You see his spirit exit his body. You see it wander around, and you see it just trying to exit the arena, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing, amazing mind programming symbolism there.
Yeah, the light show is that way too. Well, Yellow Submarine would have been just as dark, I think.
Indeed. Well, it's an interesting where this has taken us. But yeah,
we started with the Federal Reserve and the Inspector General, the OIG. Actually,
OIG, OMG, oh my God! You know, it's all there on my website. I think there's another strong correlation, Don, with the other paper that I published just today. There, it's a storyline of what's happening in Egypt, but it ties into the Brotherhood of Islam. And holy cow, ladies and gentlemen, the Brotherhood of Islam is indeed tied into so-called Reformed Judaism. What's also known as modern Zionism. Incredible research paper done by a guy named Jack Manoulian back in April of 2005. It's called The Origins of Modern Zionism. Oh my goodness, the life and times of Aziz Muhammad in 1666, quite an interesting year. 1666, he converted from his Judaic roots to Islam with 300 families of his followers. 1666, ladies and gentlemen, this became the core of radical revolutionary Islam, and the Brotherhood of Islam, the descendants are all there. You wonder why, I've always wondered, thought it was bizarre, Don, why you have the Jewish rabbis in the synagogues of New York 100% behind in promoting this Cordoba House mosque. There's ground zero, and now it becomes quite clear that whole movement of Shiite Shia law ties in so much with the radical goals of modern Zionism. It's one and the same. One and the same.
Yeah, I was listening to Drew Raines today, and he said the way you deal with these problems, you just get your hands on plenty of pigs in a blanket.
Well, again,
something to that effect.
It's the Muslim. They don't believe the pork is deadly to them. Same with again the Jews. I mean, the symbolism in their religion is so much closer than people really give it credit for, and because it really is one and the same. I really think if you go back and follow Antonio Rivera's documentation and his testimony before they killed him, how he claims to have read all the documentation in the Vatican's catacombs and archives showing that Islam and the Prophet Muhammad was absolutely a creation of the Vatican by design, on purpose, again, to gain control of the Holy Land, the Middle East, to have the descendants of Jacob, the actual blood descendants of Ishmael kill themselves off, fight themselves to a bloody pulp. And that's what's happening. That's what's being said. This whole deal in Egypt is ready to ignite a firestorm of civil war between the Sunni and Shiite factions.
Mm-hmm.
And doggone it, it's easy to see how it can lead to Armageddon very rapidly. The day the music died, indeed.
Well, you know, this bank or this temple treasury building that we were talking about in Petra, that at one point that was considered Saudi Arabia, and it went into the hands of Jordan. And the opposite end of that trade route, the Wadi Sirhan, is in Yemen. What is Yemen today?
The headquarters of the Shiite militia, the Shiite radicals.
Yes.
And terrorist hotbed. Mm-hmm.
This is not an accident. This is not an accident. Well, True, we're out of time. I appreciate you staying on so long tonight. And
I'm trying to keep regular.
Well, you were a regular kind of guy tonight.
Okay. I didn't run my mouth off too much, I hope. My wife says, sometimes she says it with love. She says, I have a constipation of the brain and diarrhea of the mouth. So I try to keep regular.
Okay. Well, you don't want diarrhea of the brain now. That's
no.
No, that's not desired. So.
Well, again, thank you, Don. A good evening to you. And again, my website is simply atruat.com. I've had a lot of posting done this last 24 hours. I think it's really key information, but you decide, ladies and gentlemen. You can see the video we talked about tonight there on the website as well. Good night, Don. Thanks for having
me. Okay, True. If you can hang on just to listen, I'm going to play another song before we say good night. I have to play this song as a follow-up.
Very good.
This fits our first topic in the clip that we played tonight. So, again, Quincy Jones.
Please understand that we realize all these hebes, shebes, and weebies can cause the connoisseurs of speech to get the heebie-jeebies. But after all, if you don't be, and they don't be, who do? So allow us to personify and conjugate the verb to be for you. We're the human being band.
We got great big bottom, getting down. We got the only low bass, baby, when there ain't no bass around. You know we rock house. Tell you right quick, I wanna get a little bit. Keep it for a while, so everybody can check this sucker out.
Doing it. is hot.
Yep, we be doing it here on Evident Footprints. That wraps it up, folks. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and tonight's special guest, Dr. H. Uwat. Want to thank Windtalkers Radio Network for broadcasting Evident Footprints. Also over at BBS Radio, Seth Hendrick on the sound. I want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night. I'm going to be sharing some really interesting information with you about mind control, propaganda, and how it was imported into this country. You're going to be fascinated with two speakers that will be featured on the show, although they won't be live. So you want to tune in tomorrow night. In the meantime, I want to thank you all for tuning in, and I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.